Welcome to the Adversity Psychologist podcast, a podcast incorporating narratives about facing and navigating adversity, a mixture of people, their experiences, and professional psychological discussion. I'm Dr. Tara Quinn-Tirillo. I'm a qualified and regulated psychologist with over 20 years' experience of mental health, disability, and human behaviour. I want to share people's stories of navigating adversity in the hope that through being heard, a dose of compassion and some understanding, we can help others in the face of adversity too. Hi, and welcome to the Adversity Psychologist podcast. So I am Dr. Tara Quinn, and today, super excited, we're carrying on our theme of bibliotherapy. So I have Bijal Shah with me. Would you like to say hello, who you are and what's brought you on today?
Sure. Hi, Tara. Thank you so much for having me today. I'm really excited to talk to you and talk about all things books and psychology and adversity. Thank you for having me, and I hope I can share some of my bibliotherapy and book knowledge with you and your audience.
So we met last year, didn't we, at an event which was Poetry for Medicine. I really, really enjoyed it. It was at Senate House, so just the venue, everything, it was quite magical. And I was really
it was summer.
So it feels like we're just saying it feels like a really long time ago, and I was just immersed. I'd heard of bibliotherapy, but I hadn't really immersed myself in that world, and I just went away from it because there were several speakers, weren't there, in the evening, just kind of mind blown of why have I not incorporated this into my work before or my own personal life as well. So you, the author of, would you like to tell us about your book? So I've started to show people, I'll put it in the show notes as well. Tell us a little bit about your book and the story behind why you wanted to write it as well.
Thank you so much, Tara. Yes, so the book is called Bibliotherapy, The Healing Power of Reading. And it's essentially almost like a combination of all my work over the last 5 to 7 years since the bibliotherapy practice has been set up. I launched it around sort of 2017, 2018, and you know, essentially bibliotherapy, the use of literature as a therapeutic tool. Yes. And what I'd been doing over that time whilst the practice was being established was, you know, offering social prescriptions in the form of book prescriptions to people, so the whole concept of therapeutic reading, and also offering bibliotherapy sessions, so counselling sessions using literature as well. And also training to other mental health professionals who are interested in this space and the methodologies that I was using. And just to give you a bit of background, I sort of did a diploma in counselling, and I was using literature a lot in my own therapy, which then led me to, you know, officially set up a therapeutic practice focused just on using literature. And prior to that, I used to work in banking, but I'd always loved books and psychology, and, you know, if I'd had an opportunity again, maybe I would have gone down that route. But I did have
I love that. That's almost another podcast episode. That I love it when people go, do you know what? This is what I want to do now, and that they can take that jump and try.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we're so lucky to do different things, and, you know, have 2-3 careers in our lifetimes now. It's so different to our parents' generation. So I really found that, we were in the process of moving to San Francisco as well, which is where I kind of started setting all of this up. But, you know, I really felt like it was the right time to kind of leave banking and kind of set up this practice that I've always really been fascinated by. And there was so much research on the use of literature as a therapeutic tool, and I was mind blown. And one of the things that really stood out to me was that this history, whilst it's there in university archives, or, you know, it's never really been told, it's not readily available. And I really wanted to tell that story of the 2,000 years of bibliotherapy, sort of from the ancient Greeks. And, you know, even things like DBT is really a form of stoicism, and it's come from there, essentially. But over the years, you know, people have used therapeutic reading, even if it's just reading scripture and Lectio Divina, and, you know, the religious sort of texts, and also then moving on to, around Wordsworth and Shakespeare and Montaigne, and that whole era where Montaigne was writing a lot of essays, and he was the father of the Passport Essay. So there was so much there that I really wanted to bring together, even, you know, coming up all the way to the pre-World Wars and the post-World Wars and then all the other research that's been done on reading, even from things like cognitive development of the brain and executive functioning to, you know, some of the more therapeutic aspects. And I mean, there's so much and there's so many amazing people, you know, PhD students and researchers doing all this incredible work on reading and its benefits. And I felt like I had to bring this all together. So the first section of the book is really focused on this history of therapy.
That's what I was going to say for people, that it's all in here, isn't it? That it's a nice journey and it's kind of a story in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So I kind of felt like that would just be a nice introduction to what it is and how it come about and developed over time. And then, you know, of course, people then wanted to see, well, what's the methodology that you're using? What's a practical example? So the second section then, well, A, talks about my own journey into it and my own use of books.
There's a more push now for therapists to talk about their own. When I trained, we weren't encouraged really to kind of be humans behind the kind of therapist title. And I love that that's coming more and more into people's work now.
Yeah, it is. Exactly. I've seen it in a few memoirs, but that's sort of almost like confessional narrative.
Yeah.
Through memoir to talk about some of the things that have really shifted in us through therapy, and specifically for me, I talk about it through the lens of bibliotherapy and the books, and I actually, you know, do a whole audit of bibliotherapy, so of my, in terms of how books have changed my own life through the years, from childhood to now, and every single book that's had an effect on me, you know, things like The Great Giant, like Judy Blume and George Eliot. Maybe some Kenneth Saini's work or Khaled Gibran, like poetry, which I'm sure is pretty contemporary. I mean, lots of it's affected a lot of people's lives in a positive way, all this literature. But I just wanted to bring that in that first story. That's my story, and then of course the stories of my clients and the different mental health themes that they've kind of,
which I really love as well. That kind of, what does it look like for people and the journey of it.
Yeah,
I love that you do work supporting, because, you know, as a user of it, someone who may want to go and, you know, have therapy using bibliotherapy, but also for professionals who may want to learn how to integrate it into their own practice. I find that really helpful to go, what does it look like for someone? Where do we see the change?
Yes, exactly. The actual bibliotherapy session.
Yeah,
right. And sort of complementing that reading side is all the creative bibliotherapy techniques that I use, from sort of just something basic as literary journaling and reflective practice to letter writing, poetry writing, some prompts for all of these tools and techniques. So just kind of, I wanted to make the book quite structured and guided in that way, so that people could go and apply these things to their own lives as they're reading. That sort of concept of leveraging your reading. So that was essentially the second section of the book. And then with all those exercises at the back and the book recommendations from you know, across different themes, from like motherhood, sexuality, to, you know, diversity issues and racism, you know, just dealing with all these different things, from depression and struggling with illness.
Yes.
So there's about 8 stories. Even one focused on neurodiversity and using it with children. So that was really the middle section. And then the last section was more about personal curation and the social prescription concept of prescribing books, and my methodology. Plus lots of A to Z of book recommendations across different mental health themes, you know, across fiction and nonfiction, so from anxiety to depression to even midlife crises and insomnia and phobias,
range of human emotions that we may be presented with in situations as therapists. And I really like that showing, because I think the thing that really struck me kind of reading this is, as a therapist who hasn't used it before, sometimes that kind of threat brain can go, oh, what's it going to look like, and am I going to do it right? And what I really love about the way you write is you've made it very kind of containing. You know, this is what it is. This is where you can start. This is what it might look like. But also, as somebody who may want to just start exploring it, it's not necessarily something, and I'm going to throw this out there, is it something that you have to go and see a bibliotherapist for, or someone who uses bibliotherapy, or could you start your own journey? And then that might lead you to deciding whether you need
to see something. Exactly. Yeah, it's very much that sort of self-bibliotherapy, as I call it. That was exactly the goal with the book, because not everyone can afford to have a bibliotherapy session, or not everyone has the time.
Yep.
And it was something you could practically do at home, you know, with some books and some paper. And I really wanted to bring in the reading and writing elements as well. So, and integrate both, because I'm a firm believer that you need creativity as a part of your healing process. I feel like healing happens about creativity, so those writing elements alongside the reading are quite helpful. And of course, if you don't like writing, you can also do voice notes or voice journaling and things like that, record things,
which is modern age of technology can be useful. So again, exactly. It's kind of breaking down barriers, I guess, because some people might kind of, or we can have those kind of cognitive biases, or I'm not a writer, or I'm not good at X, Y, or Z. That's accessible for you.
And if you're too tired to write at night, you might just want to record some voice notes to yourself, and you don't need to share them with anyone. Just listen to them yourself. And often when I do that, I feel healed just listening back.
I love the concept of healing as well. That the event that we went to was kind of called Poetry in Medicine, wasn't it?
But yeah.
One thing I wanted to kind of just talk about, that bibliotherapy, because there can be a misconception of it is writing poems and using poems therapeutic, but it isn't, is it? It's a range. And that's really important. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for raising that, Tara. Yeah, I completely missed that. But you're absolutely right. Like, obviously, the event we went to was focused very much on poetry and use of reading and writing poetry, but that's just the one genre. And we do use novels, which is a narrative, so narrative therapy.
Yes.
We use like the epistolary novel, which is the use of letters and writing letters back to characters and characters writing letters back to you, that kind of concept of theory of mind. And there is also reflective practice, which is essentially journaling with a goal in mind. Sometimes people don't like the stream of consciousness approach and would rather have an ability to be writing with a goal in mind and a purpose, so we do also focus on that. You know, you can also use this with couples, you know, as a with your partner, and getting them, you know, to write letters to each other, for example, or read poetry aloud together, or, you know, all these things that kind of bring us closer, allow us to talk about what we might be going through characters and stories, and giving the other person context, which can feel a lot more safer.
That's what I was going to ask. People listening, why might that be better for people than verbally having that conversation? What are the barriers, I guess, sometimes to just saying to your partner, this is how I feel, versus
I think often, you know, writing it down gives, if you write a letter to your partner, for example, talking about some of the grievances or issues that you want to resolve, then it gives the person some time to think about it without necessarily reacting straight away or pushing the defences up. It gives them time for the defence to come down. Also talking about the issue through another similar story, or that gives context, or gives you the language to explain what exactly it is and why it's bothering you, can also be another avenue for your partner to then safely explore these issues and not feel so attacked. Because often when someone's giving us feedback or airing a grievance, you know, we tend to move on to that that defense side because you feel we're being attacked. But, you know, I think reading and writing is this extra third space that really enables that in a more positive fashion. In terms of discussing issues. So I would really recommend, you know, just to get a sense, like if you get a chance to pick up the book, you'll get a sense of how you might work with couples and couples bibliotherapy, or how you can even work with your partner without necessarily going to a bibliotherapy session. All of these things. I think reading is a wonderful tool to help you.
We think of imagination, creativity. It's almost. I have kind of thought to myself as I heard you talk, and as I've had the book a little while now, is that actually it's so obvious that this should be quite a major part of therapy, because we know there's so much research about children who are read to and are encouraged to look at books and read text. Have better imaginations and I think when you think of that journey through to adulthood and how you express yourself, how you use that imagination, I think that's no brainer, isn't it?
Absolutely. Engaging with those creative parts of ourselves, and then also empathy and theory of mind, like both
really good
point. Incredible for helping somebody develop their empathy skills and deepen their empathy, and also, like I mentioned, the theory of mind skills, which is all about being able to see things from another person's perspective. Literally, that skill, which is part of empathy, but mentalizing and being able to truly get into someone else's shoes. Reading is a huge contributor to helping you develop that skill, because you're doing that as you're reading about, about the character or getting into the character's head. So I do feel that reading is fundamental to that. And I think if you're looking to become a better partner or, have a better relationship, incorporating that daily reading is actually pushes you on that path, because now you're much better understanding another human being just through these skills that reading's given you, So.
And as you say, I love what you were saying before about that, when I've done couples work and I'll see people individually who are part of a couple and they're trying to work on something themselves, is that the thing that you hear again and again is that ability to be vulnerable while you're listening rather than to interject. And actually, when you're reading and learning about, you create space for characters. So I actually think that's a very good skill, but it's also slightly less threatening, I think, as well.
Less threatening, exactly. Yes. And I think social media, for example, doesn't really allow us to be vulnerable, whereas reading is a space you can go to be more vulnerable and allow yourself to explore shame and guilt and some of these other emotions that are maybe absent from social media, in terms of not always expressing things that are difficult for us or negative, or we're more biased towards that the positive emotions on social media. So I think reading is that space that we can go to, and it almost feels like this, again, it's a free public space that we should be using, to be ourselves and drown our sorrows in the sorrows of the character who's going through the same thing, that connection, that shared space.
And so, that's actually a really interesting point, because I know at the moment that the phrase toxic positivity is being used quite a lot, that there can be this kind of almost chasing the happy, so we should only be looking at happy things, watching happy movies, but actually it's very healthy. We know very recently, allowing yourself to lean into all the feels, and reading allows that. Sometimes you can identify with a character that's going through something that you've been through, but it allows you also, and it's okay to go, I'm enjoying this, and this part is more melancholy, or I'm enjoying this part. This is, even more of a thriller, or whatever it is that whole range of human emotion, and learning how to sit with it. And reading is one of those things, isn't it? Where I find it a more gentle way to help people sit with feelings, but also to start. It's easier sometimes to talk about a third party, isn't it? This character in this book was feeling this.
Yeah.
Often exactly. A lot easier than I was, or this resonates with me. is a little starting point sometimes, isn't it? To, hey, this is my starting
point.
Yes.
And it allows you to suspend your judgments and self-judgment. It allows you to be more open with a therapist or a counsellor without fearing the risk of their judgment, even if they're not going to judge. You know, there's always that part of us that feels like we'll be judged. So all of these things are become easier with the use of literature, and I'm sure even other art forms, you know, whether it's cinema or similar. But, you know, this is why I feel like this whole field of social prescription is really growing, because I think people are looking to the arts more to find that healing space. So,
and do you know, big question then, do you know why that might be? Why is it, I wonder, that people are gravitating more towards the arts? I'm just wondering if it's like a post-COVID thing. Are there any other
I think there's more literature out there actually, and more awareness of how the arts can be so healing for us and so therapeutic. I think there's just been more books on the subject, and I know I've been sort of trying to raise awareness of public therapy for a really long time. And you know, I do have online courses as well which enable people to understand therapeutic benefits of reading and how to practice it in different settings with kids or adults or in groups. But I think there's just really that push, and that's allowed other people to go and, you know, set up their own practices and promote bibliotherapy and promote the arts and music therapy and dance therapy and film. And I think people are looking for alternative ways to connect with themselves beyond just a therapist or a counsellor, because, you know, A, not everyone can afford one, or B, sometimes we just want to bring in a different approach, or we want to use creativity, and
which is okay, right?
To do that,
because then one of the things we were talking about just before we hit record, and I've talked about this with another guest who also uses bibliotherapy, is whether it kind of breaks, because there can be still stigma and shame around accessing kind of what we call traditional therapy. And what I really loved was this kind of idea of whether it helps break stigma that we've got a richer way, I think, to kind of manage emotions, understand emotions, and whether bibliotherapy maybe breaks down some of those barriers, and that people that might not benefit or would find traditional kind of talking therapy not a great fit for them.
Yes, 100%. I think the emotions already laid out for you to pick out and show, and, you know, kind of just be able to use in a conversation. You know, the language is there, the story is there, and we're storytelling creatures, and I think that's what empowers us to explain something, to show context to something. And especially for people who may have attachment issues as well, I found that they gravitate more to books, or introverts find it easier as well through literature to explain what might be going on for them, which is probably why they're such a draw to it. And they're more open to saying, yeah, okay, I can see that, that makes sense to me, I'm very happy to explore that, versus being asked to talk about it and, you know, they'll just shut down.
And even before that, I wonder whether it might even be a barrier to people reaching out. So knowing that there's something they would like to work on, but sometimes people don't reach out because there's such a bias around therapy, especially for men, in the UK particularly, isn't there? And I guess one of the things that I really love is that you don't have to be a kind of a bibliotherapist, do you? So if there's a therapist, counsellor, psychologist that's listening to this, it's something you can incorporate if you're also doing verbal therapy, more traditional therapy models. Is that right?
Yes, that's exactly right. I very much say that bibliotherapy is an adjunct and to your existing practice, and it's something that you can incorporate these bibliotherapy skills. They could be part of your continued professional development. And so the courses that I've designed are intended for that purpose, so that people can read up on, you know, learn about them and incorporate that into their practice. But then they're also designed for, you know, readers who may have an interest and want to use some of those tools themselves at home, and that's certainly the goal with the book. It's for both sorts of, both sets of audiences, just to make the whole form more accessible for people.
Absolutely. And so, what I love, because there's accessibility, there's two kind of things that strike me there. There's A, you know, in the middle of a cost of living crisis, a lot of people cannot afford more traditional therapies. A lot of people can't afford to go and have bibliotherapy. But we have public libraries. We have ways of getting access to literature. And as you say, paper and a pen, that's really accessible. But also some people may not want to be in a more formal therapy space. So I love that. But the other thing that's really struck me is that you've already said at the beginning of the podcast, and again now, that people can use it for their own kind of personal interests, and whether actually for therapists it's actually a good form of self-reflection and working through your own things. So if we've said, you know, yeah, sometimes we will have, yeah, things, and we need to look after our own well-being in order to be able to give to others. And I know at the beginning, yeah, you said, Chief, with your personal journey, are you okay talking about, are there examples of ways it helps you as a therapist, as an individual, engaging, yeah, with yourself?
Yeah, 100%. Actually, I want to pick up on that, because one of the foundational techniques that I use is literary journaling. Ah, okay. And I encourage everyone, whether it's a therapist, whether it's a client, you need to literally journal against what you're reading, especially if there are things that are resonating with you. I think we're often drawn to books sometimes because there's something we need to learn from them, or something that we want to pick on and explore more. And it's really piqued our curiosity, and that's probably because of an unconscious underlying issue in your head that you're trying to resolve. So that's why I feel like when you journal and write these things down, you're unpacking it all, then you're unpacking the thoughts and triggers in your own head. And that is really helpful for self-reflection and just processing these emotions and, you know, feeling a little bit more resolved after you've done that journaling. And I often say, like, initially journal for a few days, go back to it, see if you're feeling the same way, consolidate it at the end, and it really helps bring a sense of closure to the issue that you're dealing with. And that is all you know, that's all kind of
that agency. And it sounds quite autonomous as well, so that's something you can decide, yeah, when you pick up. Obviously life demands and things as well, but you're deciding when you pick up that book, that prose, or whatever it is that, you know, as you say with bibliotherapy, it could be any kind of text really that you're reading. I actually love the fact of that. Is it right to ask, do you encourage people to write on an actual pen and paper, or are there different modalities? I'm just wondering if there was a difference that you notice between people writing, you know, physically with a pen on a piece of paper and processing those emotions.
I mean, you raise a really good point, because often we can be, you know, sometimes it's easier just to type something out.
If you're in a coffee shop, you might just use your notes or whatever.
Fine. Then you can share that with your desktop or whatever, and or print it out and read it. So that's definitely an approach. We mentioned the voice notes that you can use as well, which captures the emotion as well, because with voice we often capture our emotions. But there is that thing about, you know, using pen and paper. It's really, I think it's quite powerful, because we're literally physically drawing out that emotion through the body, taking it out of the body almost, metaphorically and literally. You know, writing it down. And I think that also has a very powerful impact on us without us realizing, that mind-body connection that I talk about. Feel like when we write things down in using pen and paper, we're just more connected with ourselves, or more connected with our feelings.
I encourage purposeful marks on paper that you can process your emotions more efficiently, you know, even compared to kind of tablets and as you say, taking your phones. But also I find it quite interesting, because sometimes you want, and I've seen this with clients, I've seen it with myself, that you'll know that kind of, sometimes there's that hesitation that, oh, I'm starting, once you see a word or you're starting to then connect that with how you're feeling, it's actually a really powerful process. But I love the fact that you're in control of kind of how, when you do that. And I think that's something I really hope people take away from this podcast, that it's so accessible in so many ways. I like the fact that it's really rigid.
Thank you so much for that.
That's the thing that really struck me as I was away. This is the book to kind of digest. It's not a book to just go front to back. It's a pick up, put down. And what I really love is one day you might want to read, you know, like a client example, and another day you might want to go back over history. But it really kind of opened my eyes up in terms of what you would be reading and what you'd be connecting and how you can do that, you know, from journaling to reading to writing poetry if you want, just having conversations with your partner and writing down, writing notes, letters to each other. There's so many ways.
Exactly. I mean, I think this is exactly how, you know, intended it for it to be. People could reach out to it again and again, bookmark things, write down notes. You know, if you read it on the Kindle, you can also annotate the notes. But it really was the intention that it's a book, go-to book that people could just, you know, dive in and out of and when they need. And also the references to all the book recommendations for different issues. You know, if you're struggling with something, go and read this fiction book, this novel. Or if you're struggling with anxiety, you know, go and read.
I really like that.
Or, you know, notes on anxiety, or just, you know, different issues call for different things at different times of our lives.
Absolutely. So I like the fact it's kind of given people that little stepping stone to the next bit, because sometimes what can happen is that kind of paralysis of, now where do I go and what do I do? And it can sometimes be overwhelming. Go, where do I start? What, you know, literature is such a broad thing, isn't it? I really like, I don't know where, you know, what your kind of take on that is. To me, I just saw it as little kind of stepping stones. Here's where you may want to go. So people.
Yes, exactly. And also, if you want to curate your own list, you know, that's it. Fine. You can do, this is how I approach it, and you may find that helpful.
Really refreshing concept, and it probably sounds so obvious once you've heard it, but that's something that really struck me going, wow, because a lot of us would just gravitate to psychology therapy books on anxiety or low mood. What I really love is that almost quite mind-blowing, wow, we can go and read a novel or a piece of prose.
And I think maybe I should have made this more clear at the start of the episode, but you know, it is a cross genre, and in fact I use fiction more. Because fiction really gives us the opportunity to explore truth in an unlimited way. It gives the license to tell the truth, which sometimes, you know, non-fiction will constrain by the fact or the truth. We can't bring in any of our own sort of exploration beyond the factual side. But having said that, memoir and novels are amazing. They're really similar. They're, you know, what I call very literary, a very sort of character driven as opposed to plot driven, and it's that character driven piece that allows us to explore all these emotions within us.
I find that a little bit safer for some people as well. I think, you know, coming back to, you know, kind of looking at different genders, I do find for more of the male clients that I work with that there are more barriers around just how accessible emotions are, as you know, putting language to emotions, identifying them, being comfortable then sharing that with other people. This for me is a really lovely stepping stone, but it's also breaking down some of those barriers of reading, writing poems that's not a female, because that's something that came to mind for me, that it's not just something that females would do.
Especially things like journaling, I often find that women are more drawn to it, but actually men do it, but I feel like there's just a greater proportion of women in a journal.
Well, that's why this is a really lovely platform to go, this is accessible for everyone, and how lovely. And I always say, if it's to bring it as well, we're in a fast-paced world. Sometimes I find with some kind of well-being stuff, it can go on our chore list and it be like a to-do thing rather than a project. Makes sense. So what I really love about this is it's not a really prescriptive model. It's, you know, I have caught friends or people that I've worked with saying, oh, I haven't done my breathing today, or I haven't done my mindfulness app today, so it's become a chore. Whereas this is a pick up, put down, you know, you can explore it in many ways. You can be in a train and want to take some notes on something, and I actually think that's really accessible for everybody, because I'm just thinking, you know, when you're parenting, you're working, there's so many things we're juggling. Sometimes this could potentially the well-being stuff get put on the to-do list for later, but I absolutely love this.
It's like play, isn't it? It's part of the, you know, work play balance, and I often put it down into play, but at the same time it's also having all these therapeutic benefits.
Yeah. So is it all right to ask then? Because I hadn't heard of bibliotherapy being used kind of more widely. And one of the things that struck me about your talk is kind of the work you do to try and get it embedded more into kind of therapy services. And is you right to just tell us briefly a little bit about what you're doing there to make it kind of more accessible and more widely known?
Yeah, exactly. You know, so we've got a lot of online bibliotherapy courses that, you know, librarians also do as part of their reading. Do as part of their own readers advisory and then all the mental health professionals. So I've really been trying to get people more skilled and tooled up on bibliotherapy through these online courses that are, again, really accessible, self-paced. You can complete at your own time, do it online, wherever you are in the world. Yes. So that's kind of been like the first step. And then, of course, working with, I've worked with like different organizations, corporates, librarians at NHS, just delivering, you know, talks on bibliotherapy, delivering one-to-one workshops, delivering training in person as well, if you don't want to do the online versions, just to get people, again, more skilled. So I've done things for like from the United Nations, like, you know, that talk we had at the NHS where we first met.
Yes, which I was really blown away by. You know, we had psychiatrists talking who were saying how helpful it is for them because they're processing and hearing a lot, and that's a really good thing for their own well-being to be using that. And I absolutely loved that. That really stayed with me.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. It was so nice to hear the experiences of the psychiatrist and just bring in this other way of being with patients beyond just being the person who's diagnosing and treating, but also, you know, connecting over art and that relationship aspect through poetry, but, you know, relationship building. And I think that was so powerful because I think we also heal by connecting with others and connecting with ourselves and connecting through story. So I loved it. I was like, I want to do more of this. But yeah, so, you know, it's that sort of one-to-one training in corporates and even for libraries and organisations who are interested. I did some stuff with, you know, recently for like people working in foster care, that we have literature with the children, also people in care homes, you know, working with people struggling with dementia. In a group bibliotherapy setting, you know, our online group bibliotherapy course is really helpful for practitioners who want to bring in that group bibliotherapy aspect into their work, just as a facilitator or a supervisor, not necessarily as a group counselor, just to add an extra avenue for people who want to bring in bibliotherapy. So I do that, and then the bibliotherapy sessions are, you know, people tend to book those. But I'm always developing more and more different platforms. So,
which I love. You're very innovative, aren't you? Is that how can you reach more people? But also I love how, see, when you take the example, you could work with individuals who have a particular presentation condition, but also carers of those individuals, people that work in libraries, it's across the corporate, it's a complete scale, a complete breadth of people.
Yes, exactly. It's a mental health tool.
Yes.
That I feel that, you know, whether it's for mental well-being or whether it's for dealing with mental health, it's something that we can all use. And sometimes people even just want it for, you know, personal interest and well-being, just as form of escapist mindfulness, you know, like just mindful reading for pleasure because it's a break from reality, and that's okay, you know. That's,
and I love that. So one of the things I've done recently is gravitate back towards actual books again from devices. You know, devices are useful because you can have multiple books in them, absolutely, but I do find for myself, I am someone who likes the smell of a book, the feel of a book, I find that connection, and I am someone who will just kind of pick up a chapter, read it, put it down, do a little bit of reflecting and journaling in your day.
Because I started doing that more as well. Yes. Reading the paperback and the hardback versus the Kindle and the audio. Yeah.
And I think for people as well, because a lot of people, I talk about this a lot, when it comes to well-being at the moment, there can be a lot of, when I get to the end of the day, I'll read or I'll do this, or when I'm on leave or at the weekend. So we can do a lot of putting off. And what I really love about all of the bibliotherapy, I'm going to say all of the bibliotherapy, let's call them techniques, if that's right, is that they're very kind of micro things you can do throughout your day. And I think actually that's really good habit formation as well, rather than, you can sometimes have the mindset, I used to be like that when I was parenting. I used to love reading one or two chapters, but I used to think there's no point, I've only got 10 minutes, I'll wait tonight in bed. And then what happens? You're so tired you don't. Is actually getting into those little habits. I can do a little bit of journaling, keep it out somewhere, or keep a stash of books out that you can just pick up, put down, integrating it more. That's the thing that I've really kind of taken away from this, is how people
Exactly. And I talk about the toothbrush test, where, like, unless you're doing something daily, you will not do it regularly. And so I feel that, you know, if you can read a little bit every day, even if it's 5 or 10 minutes, you start to incorporate it, you know, but like going to the gym, start to incorporate it into your life, and hold yourself accountable for reading every day, because I think it's so worth doing if you can, you know, just for your own mental well-being and peace of mind as well.
Yeah, I have little kind of pockets of books. I have more that are kind of fact books. I have, you know, things like this that I'm working my way through. Yeah. Then I have kind of what I call the kind of more traditional novels that I'm reading.
That point in time. Yeah. You know what I mean? You don't have to, like, always put with one book and then it becomes a chore if you're not into
We've all been there with, oh gosh, I'm so behind, I can't remember the story now. And actually, I quite often will have a couple of novels on the go, because I might be more in the mood to connect with that particular character, that particular story on one day, whereas other days I'm like, no, I'm in the mood for this book. So I've always been a little bit like that, and actually not realizing how good that is for well-being. Some days I do want to connect with something a bit more melancholy, and that's what I'm wanting, and other days I may need something different, and that's actually okay, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and you should have the permission to do that, you know. Yes,
I like
you
that.
So
in terms of finding out more, because obviously we've kind of covered your book, so Bibliotherapy, The Healing Power of Reading, fantastic. It's now out in paperback as well. I have my original.
Yes, and in 10 languages. So if you're internationally based, you know, it's available in Chinese and Portuguese and Arabic and many of the Eastern European languages as well, Hungarian, Slovenian, the Greek one's coming out soon, Bulgarian. So there's a lot. Yeah. So I'm hoping to continue to push it out into different languages. It's all part of this, you know, mission to spread awareness of bibliotherapy.
So if people want to find out more about you, where is the best place for them to go? So in terms of finding out, you know, obviously there's a book, the work that you do, the courses and things that you run, where's the best place for people to find you?
Yeah, so obviously my website, which is www.booktherapy.io. But I also have a podcast called Bibliotherapy with Bijal Shah, where I share different insights and book recommendations and interview authors. And then I also have a Substack, which has all the transcripts on there if you just want to catch up on you know, the episodes without necessarily listening to them. But I also share, you know, little articles or pieces on bibliotherapy. But my website has a lot of the online training courses if you're interested in that. It has all the bibliotherapy sessions on there, which you can book yourself, or if you just want a book prescription, which is essentially a therapeutic reading list and a social prescription of what to read.
Yes.
Then, you know, you can also just go and get one of those. Obviously, that's a lot cheaper than the bibliotherapy sessions.
Yes.
So
I imagine sometimes that might be a gateway to then moving on and having a more formal bibliotherapy session, maybe starting off.
Exactly. I think often people will start off with the reading list and then they may want to have a session after that, which is totally fine.
Which I like, because that kind of fits with that organic autonomous model that I really like. I'll make sure that all of these links are in the show notes, so if people are listening, you can just click straight on and then it will take you to these. I always ask people for, I know we've talked about a lot, we've had some amazing bits of information, I've learned loads. If there was one little takeaway that you could leave us with, what might that be, or one little reflection?
For me, that's a real slam dunk. It's always leverage your reading. So it's great to read and read for pleasure, but there is always so much that you can get out of your reading. So use these tools, use these techniques, and let reading empower you, because you'll be amazed at the results and what you can, where it can lead you and what you can achieve at the end of that.
Or how you can feel
at the end of that. Not necessarily about achievement, but also just about your well-being.
Yes. So you're kind of connecting for well-being, but just being a little bit mindful of what you're reading, what you're doing with it. It's the richness, the depthness, that's the thing that strikes me. And this evening I bought a new book at the weekend. I am going to make time this evening to just reflect and do a bit of reading.
Oh, you'll have to let me know how you get on with it.
I will do
all the techniques or what you end up learning about yourself.
What I'm going to do and reflect. The journaling I think is something I don't do enough of that. And I always notice I put it off, but just something as simple as getting a notebook that stays out, it's there, the kind of habit formation stuff, I think is really helpful.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you for coming. It's so lovely to meet you in person, but it's also lovely that you made the time to come on the podcast as well.
No, thank you, Tara, for having me. And it was so
people
nice
need to hear about
connect online after meeting in person. And, it's always, it's just always a pleasure to have a conversation with you. And talk about
and to connect through literature, that's arrived here into the podcast now, that initial love of literature took me to that event to meet you and the others.
Exactly. And it's so lovely that we've now been able to build this relationship share
that's
more,
what it's all
our
about.
Love of reading
love of reading and value connections and how we can kind of bring those things together. So thank you so much for making the time. Come on.
No, thank you, Tara. Thank you for having me.
We need to keep an eye on you and see what you're up to next. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for listening to the Adversity Psychologist podcast. I'm Dr. Tara Quintarillo, and it's been lovely having you along to listen to this episode. If you want to find more about me, you can find me at drtara.co.uk. So you'll see everything I'm up to, my media work, my collaborations, my clinical work, if you're interested in that. And of course, all the other episodes of the Adversity Psychologist podcast. If you're interested in coming on, you can also contact me and let me know what you would like to come and talk about. I'd love to hear from you.